Hello, this is Christopher Avery, the Responsibility Process Guy, and you're listening to the Agile Uprising Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. I'm Brad Stokes, and with me today is Christopher Avery, the Responsibility Guy. Christopher, how about you tell us a bit about yourself?
Well, thank you, Brad. I'm thrilled to be here on the Agile Uprising podcast. Wow, a bit about myself. So I've been fascinated for close to 30 years with the psychology of cause and effect. In other words, whether life is happening to us or whether we are creating it all, even the stuff that we don't like. And the way our thoughts about that are processed in our minds. That has produced a pattern that's now pretty well known around the world in many circles called the responsibility process. And the responsibility process is a pattern that we use for processing thoughts about taking and avoiding ownership. The link to cause and effect is that we tend to like owning that stuff that we think we caused intentionally and is good. We tend to not like to take ownership of stuff that we don't like, and we tend not to think that we caused it. We tend to think that it was caused out there somehow, somewhere. And so this is valuable information, number one, in my own life, regardless of whether anybody else cares about it. And so I've been pursuing it as my own practice, my own study, my own mastery, my own journey. But it's exceptionally powerful for anybody who wants to live a happier life, who wants to be more free emotionally, who wants to experience the power of real choices in every situation, and who wants to be more productive and more effective and perhaps more valuable in life. So that's who I am.
That's pretty fun. Now, we said that you're the responsibility process guy. For our listeners who don't know what the responsibility process is, what is the responsibility process?
Good. Let's start there, Brad. Thank you. So imagine a stack of words, and maybe even if you're listening to this, you could do a quick search on just responsibility process or even responsibility process and my name, Avery. And it's a stack of words starting at the bottom, so you're going to ascend through this stack. And at the bottom, the word or phrase, short phrase, lay blame. And above it, the phrase justify. And above it, the word shame. And above it, the word obligation. And then a line above obligation. And then above it, the word responsibility. And it seems like a very, very simple poster. And what it says is that every time something goes wrong, every time you're getting a result that's different than you want, even if it's just tripping over a crack in the sidewalk so that you feel a little embarrassed, every time something goes wrong, it produces a little bit of angst or anxiety inside of us, a little bit of frustration, a little bit of upset. And we can talk about the very precise psychology of how that happens, but we can come back to that, Brad. So every time that happens, then our mind tries to help us cope with this anxious feeling. And it serves up an auto-response answer for us that starts at the bottom of the chart. It starts in blame. So our first response when something goes wrong is internally and unconsciously asking the question, who did this to me? Who caused this? Who caused this to happen? Who made this crummy coffee? Who put that spotlight, that stoplight there? Who built the crack in the sidewalk this way? You know, who thought it was a good idea to create this rule? So every time that we're a little unhappy or upset, our minds try to help us cope by assigning cause outside of us and allowing us to believe that we know better and that we're a victim of somebody's stupidity. Etc. if we, so this is just a mental state. So lay blame, we call a mental state. It's a coping state, and it has its own cause-effect logic in it. And the cause-effect logic is very simple. I'm in the position of effect. This is happening to me, and cause is outside of me. And therefore, for my life to change, for my anxiety to go away, for me to be happy, then somebody else has to change. And so that's the premise, that's the assumption. And all of these steps, Brad, it doesn't matter how smart we are, how educated we are, how much authority we have, or how much experience we have, or even how ambitious or motivated we are all susceptible to these. And since it's a mental state, if we buy the answer our mind hands us, then we stay in the mental state, we stay with that logic box of cause and effect, and then we use our brilliance and our smarts and our persuasion to try and prove that other people need to change. Or we can simply recognize that we're in blame, that it's just a mental state, and now that we recognize it, it's a choice as to whether or not we stay there, and we could choose to get off of it. And if we let go of blame, then we graduate up. And graduating up means we graduate to justify. And we can spend more time talking about what justify is. So same thing in justify. We can either buy into it or we can see it for what it is. And if we choose to not stay in the mental state of justify, we graduate up to shame. Shame is just lay blame on self. Instead of blaming outward, we're blaming inward. But we still think there's something wrong, that it's stupid. And therefore, shame is full of self-punishment and self-loathing. If we identify that for what it is and realize it's just a choice to stay there, then we can move to obligation. And obligation is a mental state of feeling burdened or trapped in a process, a flow, a commitment, a promise that we don't want to keep, but we have to. So we have to be somebody we don't want to be. We have to do something we don't want to do. We have to put up with having something we don't want to have, some consequence or something else. And it's actually not until we refuse to feel trapped that we can start getting to this mental state called responsibility. And responsibility is also just a mental state. And it's always available to us. It's always accessible. So one of the reasons that people want to learn how to practice this is so that they can get themselves to this mental state of responsibility more frequently. And in the mental state of responsibility, we're far more brilliant. We have far greater access to our complex adaptive reasoning abilities in our mind. We have no logic box. We're wide open to all the forms of probabilistic reasoning available to us. We're far more generative, far more creative. We feel free. We feel powerful. We feel that choice when we're in this mental state. It's a fabulous place to get to and to hang out in. And so that's it. The responsibility process, a simple stack of words that is very easy to recognize, especially in others, Brad. It's 1,000 times easier to see it in other people than it is to see it in ourselves.
Oh, isn't the saying, recognize the plank in your own eye before you get the speck of somebody out of somebody else's?
Yes, absolutely. And therefore, it only works when self-applied. So, you know, if right now you're thinking about how you can't wait to call that person you dearly love and tell them that you know what's wrong with them, don't do it, because that'll backfire on you. Because they'll then have two problems. They'll have whatever problem you want to point out to them that has them stuck in justify or whatever. And then they'll have a bigger problem at that moment, and that is you labeling them. And by the way, you'd be coming from blame if you were to do that. You'd be, be saying, I have a problem. You need to change in order for you to be okay with me. So the responsibility process model seems very simple, yet to apply it means that we need to be willing to realize that we're a causal force in our life in everything that upsets us, and that the place to solve the problem is not out there, but it's in here.
Now, it's an interesting word because I can imagine that some would actually interpret it slightly differently. And one of the ways I could see this is the obligation state. To some people would almost feel like responsibility, almost. And I'll just put this out. Say they're inside a project that's experiencing a great deal of chaos. We're talking the world of work. And they feel that they are holding the whole thing together. I am taking responsibility. I'm doing everything I can. But it's that, no, I'm doing this because I feel a sense of obligation that I'm struggling in this. It's not understanding that responsibility is I own the part that I can. But I choose to own that. I choose to take that as opposed to this is imposed from me from outside. Is that a fair?
Well, that's more than fair, Brad. That's spot on. Is the power of this material is that until we had this research, this phenomenological study, we used the word responsibility for all of these stages.
Okay.
Labeling, it's his responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Justify is a little harder to say, but it's the responsibility of the environment. It's the responsibility of the circumstances, right? That I can't do anything. Shame. We, our societies, every society I've checked on, especially more industrialized or advanced economies, who believe in productivity and employment. We define responsibility as shame and obligation. So, Brad, you have been reinforced your whole life by authorities, parents, teachers, others, for beating yourself up when you've made a mistake. They go, oh, good boy, look at Brad. What a great character he is. He's taking responsibility for that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been reinforced for doing what you're supposed to do, even if you despise it. Oh, look at Brad. He's really staying in there. He's really following through. He's not a quitter.
So somebody's in the... I'm going to go back to the project scenario again, thinking about the world of work. The blame state seems fairly obvious. The blame state seems, I'm in this mess and it's their fault. It's a very external pressure.
Yeah.
As we move up the tree, is it more... We're starting to internalize this. Is the actual state of moving from blame to responsibility the change from externalization of pressure to moving it to an internal state?
In obligation, it's really interesting. So some people see a kind of a psychology / sociology comparison between blame and justify being psychology, externalizing, but shame and obligation being a little bit more sociological and dealing with the world around them. So in obligation, we build up resentment towards who or whatever it is that we think has us trapped. So we resent the mortgage, we resent the kids, we resent the needy elderly parents that keep us from going bowling instead of, going to help them do whatever they need to do. We resent the boss. And, the interesting realization there is that if I've been making my own decisions in my life for more than 3 or 4 years, then I get to face the fact that I am the architect of my life. I am the architect of my life's experience. It's a product of my choices. And if you want to argue that, then I'd go further and say it's a product of my filters. Right?
Oh, that's a nice lens. That wasn't on purpose.
Yeah, you could argue that my filters were really caused by my environment, by my parents and my church and my schools and my neighborhoods. And I say, okay. And do you want to defend those filters or do you want to examine them and decide which ones you want to keep and which ones you want to change? So filters are choices as well. So if I've been making my own decisions for a few years, I am the architect of my life. If there's anything I don't like about it, there's only one person who gets to refactor it.
So how does a person move from the place where their locus is outside, their locus is either they're in the blame state or in the lower levels of the responsibility process, how do they move from the knee-jerk monkey brain reaction, it's all them, to the, this is my part, this is what I can do, this is my choice at this point?
Right. So what they do is they start a practice of practicing responsibility using the three keys to responsibility of intention, awareness, and confront. So just like, you know, if your body is really tight and you want it to be looser, then you start a stretching practice, right? And you learn what's true about your muscle fibers, and you learn what's true about how to help them gradually release. And so, you know, you study yoga or you study stretching, and you learn the difference between ballistic stuff that's going to tear them versus incremental gradual stuff that's going to, you know, find them. And you learn about opening, and, you know, you all of a sudden you open yourself to this huge volume of what's true that you didn't pay attention to before. Right. So that's how to do what you ask, Brad, how to get out of this reactive mode of below the line to being at choice about recognizing those mental states and moving to responsibility. So intention, awareness, and confront. So I'll give an example. I have a very powerful intention to take 100% responsibility for my life all the time, every day, especially in new upsets. And then I developed very acute awareness of what it's like to be me or in my mind when I'm in blame and when I'm justifying and when I'm in shame and when I'm in obligation. And so for most things in my life, I go from experiencing something going wrong, having a little bit of angst about it, catching myself in one of those mental states below the line, and moving out of it to responsibility about that quickly. And other people take months or weeks or days or hours. And so all of my work is designed to help you move from doing that in years or months or weeks to days or hours or minutes.
So the process of enlightenment, which is where we're talking about, we're intending to go to a direction, we're becoming aware of the situation internally that's preventing us to do there, and then we confront the things inside and without that we feel are preventing us from getting to the destination. Is that along the lines of what you're speaking here? I'm just trying to make sure that I understand. Because it sounds like it actually just has a very set pattern as well, is the intention. Can the awareness happen before the intention? The intention leads the awareness.
That's a really good question, and I think it's kind of academic, Brad.
Okay.
So three keys to responsibility are intention, awareness, and confront. All three of them are capabilities, profound capabilities of the mind that we're born with and can develop. We can develop them like we can develop any muscle or any other skill. And it's not like some people are born with them and some people aren't. And our schools and parents don't tend to develop them. We tend not to be introduced to these things until we get into studying change processes, which for most people get started in studying either leadership or personal growth. And then awareness is the one that's most used. My belief is that awareness, though, is only part of the puzzle. For me, I put intention first, because if I don't intend to operate from responsibility, then all the awareness and confront in the world doesn't matter. So for me, intention is everything.
The deliberateness of thought, deliberateness of action. So if I'm aware that I happen to call people by nicknames as opposed to short names, that I'm not by their preferred full name, and yes, listeners, this is a bad habit of mine at times, but if I'm not intent about actually confronting that particular thing and correcting, I will continue going on misnaming people forever. If I'm intentional about it and I'm aware that I have a habit that needs to be confronted, and even if I slip, I'm then able to correct. And the practice of being intentional, taking responsibility for my action and then correct, becomes more ingrained each time I do it as well.
Right. And that's why there's a game that we teach that people love, and I think it's chapter 7 in the book, The Responsibility Process, called the Catch Sooner Game. The Catch Sooner Game just says that you can change any habit of mind or behavior that you want to change by simply catching yourself engaging in what you don't want to do, stopping right then and switching to what you do want to do, and then simply forgiving yourself, having some compassion for yourself, some empathy, right? That's deep circuitry that you've created over your years that has that pattern that operates that way. So don't beat yourself up. Don't chastise yourself. Don't, quote, hold yourself accountable, which is what most personal change programs teach. Instead, forgive yourself for being human. Forgive yourself for not being able to change a long-held pattern in a moment.
I love it.
The next step is to vow to catch yourself sooner in the pattern next time. That's all. Very simple. Catch yourself, change it right now for this incidence, and then forgive yourself for being human, let it go, and vow to catch yourself earlier in the pattern next time. So I tell a story about, you know, I'm going to stop eating donuts. And I catch myself standing next to the food table at the party halfway through the second donut. Right.
Okay.
So part of our normal pattern would be to say, well, I've already eaten half of it, I might as well finish it. Right. This says, you know, look at that donut. Remember your promise to yourself. You just caught yourself. Congratulations. Put the donut in the trash and pick up the celery or whatever. And then forgive yourself. You're human. And then just vow to catch yourself earlier in the pattern next time. So the next time, right, I catch myself approaching the donuts at the table and catch myself. And so then I decide to go look at the celery instead. And the next time I catch myself from across the room, seeing that there's this cool table full of sweets, and I decide I don't run my body on that.
It's that practice. I can actually very much relate to this. About 10 years ago, I was a much heavier human being. I was about 320 pounds.
Wow.
I was a much bigger boy. And I've eventually gotten myself down to about 180. But when I decided to lose weight, and it was basically everybody told me I was fat. And when you're that big, you know you're not pretty. You know you're not. But what it gets to is you play a head game where it's, yeah, I'm fat. Just leave me alone. I get it. I get it. I can't do anything about it. And now I went to see a ear, nose, throat doctor, and for some reason something clicked in my head, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to lose weight. But I made a couple of pacts with myself. One of them, and I hadn't read the responsibility process at this time, was to forgive myself for slip ups. I made that very deliberate choice right at the start. Is I know I'm not going to get this right. I know I'm going to make mistakes. I am going to forgive myself, acknowledge I'm human, exact words, acknowledge I'm human, and then resolve the next time to do it a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And that was all it was. And it was such a powerful thing for me. But then we come back to the intentionality side of things. Is, well, if I know that I'm going to make some mistakes, let's set myself up for success. So I'm going to make sure that I don't put the snacks in the cupboard. And I know that I'm going to go to the cupboard. I know I'm going to go to the fridge. So what I'll do is I'm going to put some sparkling mineral water and some soda in the fridge, some diet soda in the fridge, and I'll put cashews in the cupboard. And if I go to the cupboard, rather than beat myself up about going to the cupboard, well, what I'll do is I'll have a small handful of cashews. Ah, wonderful. And I found that that was possibly the most powerful thing.
It's coffee time for you, not for me.
Oh, wine is a good thing. That was my last night. But that little change made huge impact.
Yes.
On my life. And it sounds like you're very much reflecting that. It's that acknowledge the human in this.
Well, what absolutely. And, you know, eventually what we're practicing, so we call intention the winning key. Mm. A win is an intention met. We love being winners. We love having what we want. We love doing what we want. We love being what we want. So we call intention the winning key. We call awareness the change key, because awareness helps us identify gaps between where we are, where we want to be. We call confront the growth key. And what's happening in growth, in personal growth, is we're getting more and more and more aligned with ultimate and universal reality, right? Rather than living lies, rather than fighting against what's true, we're learning what's true and aligning with what's true. And so the fact that you discovered for yourself what we call the catch sooner game makes perfect sense, because it's natural human process that works. The yes. unnatural process is the one that so many people tout, which says, find somebody to hold you accountable. And if you don't reach your goal when you say you're going to reach it, then punish yourself. Find a way to discipline yourself. And all that does...
I think the word discipline gets misused a lot of time.
Yeah. And all that does is send us to shame. Right? So if I try and use a framework that teaches me to beat myself up if I catch myself eating a donut, right? Mm-hmm. And in the responsibility process, that just sends us to shame. So we do an analysis of that and say, okay, anything that sends us to shame must not be real, must be false or fake. Mm. Well, what would send us to shame? Oh, well, acknowledging humanity, that wouldn't send us to shame. Having some compassion, having some humility, having some empathy, realizing that neural patterns run deep, that wouldn't send us to shame.
Mm. Also, I find there's a dissonance too, that when you're in that beat yourself up state where you're looking at external factors and you're not making your own choices, I find you get a real internal dissonance. So you're acting in a certain way, but your brain and everything else is screaming at you to do something else. And the misalignment almost, it's just destructive. Whereas when you can actually help bring your thoughts back to deliberate choices, deliberate responses to environment, that they are responses that you have chosen, not have been imposed on you, that the dissonance inside helps goes away. And you do, like you said, become that little bit happier, that little bit every time that you do it.
Much more free.
Much more free.
Much more. Right.
Mm. Now, responsibility, like you said, you can't – we actually use – I'm going to circle back to the word discipline, because I think it's one of the ones that gets misused a little bit. I don't see that a disciplined life is a life where you beat yourself up. A disciplined life for me is one where you make deliberate choices about what you're doing. And it comes back to your intention and confront. willing to make those, be intentional about your practice, be aware of what you're doing, and then making the decision to confront the things that you want to change. And that, for me, is more discipline than belting oneself up because I slipped on the donut, belting oneself off because I spoke out of turn. I said something that was hurtful that I didn't necessarily intend at the time. It was a reaction to something that I hadn't controlled and I wasn't intentional about. I can do something to fix the problem that I've just caused by my misawareness, where I haven't chosen to do something, I've just reacted. But belting myself up about it doesn't help them and it doesn't help me.
Yeah. You know, Brad, I think all I want to do is reinforce what you said and build on it by saying the way I think about discipline is that we use that term in two broad ways. One of those ways is that we use it as obligation. We use it as we must discipline ourselves in order to get the results that we want. We must do what we have to do instead of what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And the other way we use it is we use it as a way to talk about healthy habits. So I'm a very disciplined cyclist and swimmer.
Yes,
you can find me, you know, X times a week playing hooky from my desk and being out there on my bike or in the pool. I love it. I'm good at it. It keeps me healthy. I get tremendous meditation done. I get tremendous work done. I take care of my body. And it's effortless in that I want to do it. So it's play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's also discipline in the form of good, healthy, functional habit.
Yes. And obligation, because discipline can slip back into obligation. If you're disciplined and intentional and you're using that in the form of I'm disciplined in that I'm making my own choices and I'm aware and I'm using the responsibility process, and that might be my discipline. But that can slip back into obligation and shame very, very easily unless, again, you're maintaining that awareness of mind. Oh, I haven't ridden my bike today. I haven't ridden my bike for 5 days in this example. You know, I really need to get right back into that. And I'm a bad human being. I'm not doing what I said I would do. So I've slipped again from responsibility back into obligation. So I suppose you can elevate up the tree and you can, without being continually intentional, you can actually move yourself back down into the lower levels, can't you?
Well, the awareness there that you want to develop is that you have to evaluate yourself as having been wrong in order for that to happen.
Okay.
You must turn that 5 days that you missed working out, you must turn that into a problem, into an evaluation,
mm-hmm,
for that to happen. So if instead you say to yourself, wow, 5 days went by without me having a chance or a thought of riding, what do I want about that? Well, I think I'd like to go riding today or as soon as I can. Right. Not there's something wrong with me, or that was bad, or that was wrong. So,
yes.
So people ask me, Christopher, is there any way to get to the mental state of responsibility and stay there? And first, that question comes from being raised to think that responsibility is our character. So we were raised our whole lives to be responsible people. Except what we weren't told is that we're being rewarded for shame and obligation as well as responsibility, which means we believe that shame and obligation is good character traits. So what we teach is that responsibility is not our character at all. It's simply a mental state.
I really like that because I can see how if you've not engaged with the responsibility process before, you're not in that pattern of thinking about own choices. It would be very easy to say, oh, I'm a bad person. I never seem to get anything done. I'm not meeting my obligations. I'm not. So you could very internalize the what you perceive as an external force as an internal deficit in a very real way.
Yeah. I believe that everybody's perfect. Nobody has deficits. Deficits are labels put on us by some, you know, society that tries to mold us in certain directions.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you know, where I was going is that even though I say over and over and over that every time something goes wrong, our mind takes us to the bottom of this chart, people still believe the game is that they're supposed to go through these phases and get to responsibility and then stay there for the rest of their life. And when they learn that that's not true, so for instance, this morning, today, numerous things have gone wrong in my life and my mind takes me to the bottom of that chart and I get to find myself there and pull myself up. And that's after 29 years of practice to the point of mastery. So the truth about that is that the pattern is never going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about trying to change the pattern or overcome the pattern. The pattern is never going to go away. Every time I have angst, my mind is going to take me to blame.
Yeah.
Every time. So the game is how quickly can I recognize it and solve the real problem, which is in my head, between what I want and what I have and how to get what I want. But so people do ask, Christopher, is there any way to stay in responsibility and never get knocked out of it? And I say, sure, we know the answer to that. And that is never have anything go wrong.
What a wonderful world. Well, actually, I find some of my most fun moments are when things have gone completely wrong and I get to move through it.
Good for you. Yes.
A boring world it would be if nothing went wrong.
Actually not. So if you start examining that, where is right and wrong defined?
Oh, that's true. Human, it's a very human construct as well, isn't it?
It's a very human construct. It's right and wrong is invented by humans in order to control self and other.
Mm-hmm.
And so what if we just also had as part of our practice of intention, awareness, and confront to practice more and more letting go of right and wrong as a point of view?
Okay.
Then what that means is that more and more of our life every day becomes perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And our mind gets hijacked less often. So I talk about our mind getting hijacked. Every time something goes wrong, we have anxiety. This very precise psychology in our mind triggers the responsibility process. Well, how do we stop it from being triggered? We stop it by stopping the evaluation of right and wrong. How do we stop the evaluation of right and wrong? By getting rid of those labels and seeing more things as they really are, which is they just are.
Yes. I was reading a thing by Amos Tversky, and one of his sayings was, the easiest way to get rid of a stereotype is get rid of the label. So true. I was just thinking, and when you said that, I started reflecting, well, what do we call wrong? We call wrong things that are unexpected, things that might be unpleasant, that are uncomfortable. The unwards tend to be
unwanted.
Unwanted. Whereas if I guess your mindset is more, this is change, this is okay, and then you make your choice through that, that's a much more empowered position to use.
Yeah. I do a workshop that I've done for years, gathering the best stuff I've found on shared responsibility, on teamwork, collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the agreements that I ask people to make and hold throughout the workshop is to replace the construct of right and wrong with the construct of works for me and doesn't work for me.
Okay. I like it.
Now, we have a great conversation about, well, what does that mean? What's the difference between the semantics of right and wrong and the semantics of works for me and doesn't work for me? And the types of things that people usually come up with is that one is judgmental, where the other is actually owning or acknowledging one's own point of view. Mm-hmm. One is absolutism, acting as if you know absolute, and the other is admitting to a perspective. One shuts down conversation and the other opens it up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, that's quite a lot of fun. Now, we've talked about a lot of how we do this ourselves. How do they start themselves on the journey? And then, say we're in a team environment, how would that then translate out into, say, a group of people? Because responsibility, obligation, blame, shame, justify, all of the above, I can see that happening at an organizational level. And the organization could be a cell of 5 people. It could be a much larger thing as well. I can see that this scales and translates. Has that been your experience?
There are some things that we've learned that can destroy it from growing or scaling very rapidly. Okay. And things that can support it in doing so.
Mm-hmm.
I would say first, in terms of inviting other people. So one of the things that happens is that because it's so much easier to see in others than to see in ourselves,
yes,
then most people go immediately to, oh my God, how do I get people around me to adopt this?
Mm-hmm.
And yet they have not developed any proficiency yet themselves.
Yeah.
So the first thing I do is I implore you to apply it to only you for weeks or months before you have any expectations of anybody else doing anything with it. And just remind yourself that if there are people around you that annoy you because they're not taking responsibility, well, then the thing to ask yourself about that is, how did I create, choose, and attract that into my life? And how would I show up differently for them to be different?
And I find people normally, especially the ones that are not here or that have what you would term misbehavior, they're normally resultant of the system that they're in. There's normally a condition, either caused from without or caused from within, but there's normally something that has formed the basis of the behavior. And
you chose to be in that system with them.
Exactly. And I can either choose to help change the system and make an impact in that way, but I can't change them. I can go on my own journey, and if I can give them some tools to come along with me, but I can't enforce that on them. And it's almost I need the relationship there first, because the relationship is the basis of that communication.
Yeah.
And if they then want to engage and join me on the journey that I'm going on, that's great.
Let me share with you a story that unfortunately has happened too many times. I give a speech to a bunch of business leaders. Afterwards, one comes up to me and gives me a huge handshake, and gushing with, joy, says to me, thank you, that was a great speech. Now I understand why I, the owner of the company, is the responsible one. Yet, Christopher, I'm surrounded by all of these people that don't practice responsibility. Damn, what do I do about them?
Oh, yeah.
And so, I found that person is an example of what most of us hear and see when we're first introduced to this, and that is, we apply it to everybody but ourselves.
Mm.
Because what I want to say to that man at that moment is, I want to say, how did you attract those people to apply for jobs at your company?
Yeah.
How did you hire them? How did you select them? How did you onboard them? How did you train them? And how have you been reinforcing them all these years for them to be that way?
Right.
And who would have to change for the system to change?
Yes. Yeah. And it's one of the things I've also observed, not only for myself, but for I've seen it in teams. And normally, so I know when I've gotten better and I've changed in certain things, my world gets better. And funnily enough, I start seeing the world around me get better as well. The world, the little bits and pieces, the people that touch me, they're a little bit happier, and they, I get to see the transformations in them. But one of the things I love watching in teams is where you've got that one person in the middle that is not got it at all. They're struggling in the system. Suddenly something clicks. Oh, I can affect this. I can do something about this. And then they take it on board. Not been imposed. It's been an internal choice. And they've not from obligation decided to do this. They've just said, no, I can make a change. I can actually do something that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And they change. And it's almost it's almost like a virus. It is that one little change in that person. The person beside them says, oh, they've changed. That looks really good. I'd like some of that. I'm going to change too. And that's when you see it start to spread. Now, that can be crushed so easily.
It can be. It can be. But
it's beautiful.
The one you've just described is where I start all leadership coaching, whether it's authoritative leadership, leadership with a title, or whether it's pure leadership. Mm. And that is, for things to change, first I must change. And when I change, I change the way I look at things, and the things that I look at change. And so you ask, you know, sort of how what do you do about this in a group or a team or organization? Well, what I found is that because this research changes people's definition of responsibility, and it changes their understanding of responsibility, and it alters society's definition of responsibility that we grew up learning, then if you really want other people to join you in this, then you must become a teacher of this material. And, you know, that's why we make the poster available to download from our website. And on the back of the poster, we have the teaching points summarizing everything that I've said during this podcast with you today. And, you know, first you'll practice the idea that you don't want to label anybody else. And you only want to apply it to yourself. If you'll practice that, then I'm okay if you download that poster and immediately go say, can I try and explain this to you? I find it really valuable, and I'd like the experience of trying to explain it, and you might find it valuable too.
Yeah. That's really good.
And that's how you bring it to a team. And then maybe you have a conversation about an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
What if we all do our best to operate from responsibility, knowing full well that stuff's going to go wrong and we're all going to go to blame and nothing good's going to happen until one of us climbs back up and pulls the rest of us back up? What if we had that as an agreement? Could we do that?
And that's liberating, isn't it?
Yeah. Or how about this one? How about this one? Brad, I'm trying to learn to practice responsibility, and I know that catching myself below the line can be really challenging when I'm new at this. But it's much easier for other people to see it in me than it is in myself. I give you 100% permission to let me know if you observe any behavior in me that looks like blame or justify or shame or obligation. I hope you would do it lovingly.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that just fills my heart with good things, truthfully.
Nice. Yeah.
It does.
And in terms of larger organization, then we teach people to simply go find partners one by one at the level of peers or below. It's a little more challenging to do upward. But eventually, in terms of the system, I only work in systems now where I can work top down.
Yes.
In terms of doing deep change. And It's been years since I was willing to take a project from executive A that wants me to change group B.
Do you need to get that? I can fight if necessary.
No, I just had difficulty stopping it because it rings on my computer.
Yes, I've had that happen.
Sorry.
No problem.
Let me just text and tell him I'll get back to him.
That's okay. We'll wrap it up after this.
All right.
Respectful of your time.
So, the sneaky thing about the responsibility process is that we're absolutely sure in all cases that somebody outside of us has to change until we get to responsibility, and then we realize that the change has to happen here. And so the number of executives or owners with big budgets to hire you to change or install change or implement something in other groups is immense, and it's so attractive in business to go after this money. And the truth is, it's all false. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've had a number of experiences where Executive A hired me to change Group B, and I went into Group B and I did good work, and guess what happened? Group B, a bunch of the people there looked up and they said, I'm a better leader than that guy I report to. I'm leaving. I deserve better. This company is no longer qualified to have me work for it.
Yes. Yes. I can believe it.
So now anytime I get a call from Executive A, I say, I will help you make whatever change you want to make. But it's going to start with you and me for 3 months.
That's awesome. Yeah. Now, we're nearing the end of our time, and we'd like to give our guests a chance to call out anything that they have coming up, any promotions, any courses, really anything that is important in the world. Over to you.
Thank you, Brad. Me and my company is a little bit like Phoenix rising from ashes. I had a significant illness that started a few years back, lasted for a couple of years, took me out, took the company down. We both survived, and we're back big time. And since early 2018, I've been rebuilding, and I'm happy to say that things are going great. In late last year, we discovered that responsibility.com, the URL, was available. I acquired it. And in January, we decided to change the company name from PartnerWorks Inc., which it started as a teamwork, collaboration, shared responsibility company. So PartnerWorks is a German word meaning working productively together. So we're now the responsibility company. And we are in the moment rebranding and building responsibility.com, the website. I hope that by the time you are listening to this podcast, we will have launched a brand new product, which is a distance learning product that anybody in the world can participate in. You may have heard about the Leadership Gift Program. That's something that's 10 years old now. It's closing to new members. And the only way you'll be able to get into the Leadership Gift Program is by being a graduate of this new product, which is called Responsibility Immersion. And so go to responsibility.com, check out Responsibility Immersion. And while you're there, if Responsibility Immersion isn't for you now, then you'll have lots of opportunities to get on our announcement list and stay in touch with future workshops around the world or distance learning programs like Responsibility Immersion.
Oh, that's excellent. Now, also, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to contact you?
Responsibility.com, ChristopherAvery.com, LinkedIn. So those are all good ways.
Lots of different paths. I've been on the mailing list for quite some time, so It's been excellent. Well, thank you again, Christopher, for your time. Really, really appreciated the discussion. Honestly, I'd love to keep talking because we're into a spot that I find really super interesting. But maybe for a future date.
Yeah.
Look, also thank you to our listening audience. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate and review us on iTunes. It really does help. If you want to support through financially, you can join us on Patreon. Also, if you wanted conversation, please join us on the Agile Uprising Coalition. That's coalition.agileuprising.com, where you can talk to any of the members of the board and other members and practitioners in Agile to get support and advice and even be able to help others as well. Until next time, this is the Agile Uprising, signing out.